John Farr and Beth Locke join us this week.
Mac U.S. market share up 8.1%.
Looks like we're going to get some programs from iTunes on the iPhone.
All that and more on My Mac Podcast 149.
And Chad's back for another week. Is this going to be your last week for a while, Chad?
I think so. It's kind of going to be touch and go for the next couple of weeks, at least for the next month, probably.
Well, it was weird not having you last week, but by the same token, I'm sure that you kind of had a nice Thursday for once.
Yeah, but it was weird not being on the show. I mean, that was 2 weeks in a row for me since I was on vacation.
And you listened to last week's show.
I listened to all the shows.
And you're not on it. I bet that was kind of... Maybe that was kind of nice. You're listening to the My Mac podcast, and you're not on it, so you have no idea what's coming up.
Well, I thought, God, these guys sound so knowledgeable. Why do they sound so stupid when I'm around?
And we're also joined once again, as per usual, by Guy Searle. Hi, Guy.
Hey, guys. What's up?
What's up is Beth Locke and John Farr. We've got them joining us this week. And it's been a long time since John Farr was on the show at all. He was on the show 100.
Yeah, he sang a song.
Yeah, he sang a song. How you doing, John?
Oh, just fine.
John is a longtime Mac user, and we're going to get into that and a lot of other stuff. And we also have Beth Locke. Hi, Beth.
Hi, Tim. Hi, Guy. Hi, John. Hello. Hi, Chad.
Hi, Beth.
Is that
someone's dog?
And that's someone's dog.
I have three dogs, and they're all sitting here with me and wanting. They're on the show, too.
Okay, they have to get their own microphone or they're not allowed.
That's right. So it's been a pretty busy week for the Mac faithful. Apple released a lot of information. Probably the biggest thing coming out this week is programs coming up on the iPhone, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's
huge news.
Everybody was complaining that they wanted the iPhone to be... Wow, I'm getting feedback from someone. From Beth Locke. Because her headphones came unplugged.
I was just going to go get something for the dogs, so they'll leave it
alone.
Oh, that echo is killing me.
I know it. Hi, Beth.
Echo.
These are always the best shows.
Well, what I am going to do is put Beth...
Oh, she just left.
No, I just put her on hold.
You just put her on hold.
I have the power.
But I always wanted to go to Taos with John Farr, and now I know what it feels like.
That is what it feels like.
Let's see if Beth's still there. Uh-oh. I don't know how to unhold her.
Well, usually you unclasp your hands and move your arms away from the rest of her body.
Are you there, Beth?
I'm here. Sorry. I'm really sorry.
We were having kind of a trippy moment there, but that's okay.
It wouldn't be a My Mac podcast without a dog thing going on in the background.
That's right.
So.
It just wouldn't be the same.
Beth, we excel at train wrecks.
They all have phone buddies now, so we should be fine.
So let's do the news, get that out of the way so we can get into talking more with John and Beth. Again, the big news this week, Apple's going to release an SDK, but for those who don't know what that means, Apple's going to release the ability to program for the iPhone.
Yep.
Now, I don't think this is going to be an open platform where it's going to be willy-nilly going to 50 different websites to download applications for the iPhone. It's all going to go through iTunes, I think.
Do you?
Yeah. What do you think, Guy?
I think that's probably the best way to handle it. It kind of gives the touchy-feely back to Apple that they so obviously want so desperately. And at the same time, you're pretty much assured that anything that you get for the iPhone through iTunes... you know, isn't going to do anything bad.
Yeah, I don't want any damn viruses on my iPhone. Mm-mm. I mean, how sucky would that be? You're right in the middle of a good telephone conversation with, you know.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden dogs start barking.
And then it hangs up and it dials some sex line, and you're like, what the hell?
or worse, you were dialing some sex line and you got...
the Vatican.
You know, yeah.
Can I speak to His Holiness, please?
Oh, please don't go there.
So what else is going on in the Mac world that's remotely interesting? Oh, this little thing called Leopard.
Yeah, that's coming up pretty quick.
Next Friday, so a week from today, when most people are listening to the show, October 26th.
Yep.
Apple's going to start selling it at 6 p.m. What the hell? 6 p.m. Oh, you can't buy it till 6 p.m.
6 p.m. is the new Tuesday.
It's retarded. Just open your frickin' doors and let me buy the little box with the CD in it. Come on. Anybody else think that's stupid?
Well, yeah. I'm not really sure why they even try. I mean, why do they even bother doing it that way?
What were you going to say, John?
Well, they got to have a time. I mean, it's like you open the door or you... It's arbitrary. You know, I don't think there's any significance to the actual number or hour, but...
Well, they kind of made a big deal of it that at 6 p.m. on the 26th, you can buy Leopard. It's almost like they're trying to create another event.
Well, it's probably a big deal at places where they're selling this stuff, like at Apple stores, you know.
But. Yeah, but they're going to have, it's not like a limited supply like an iPhone or a new iPod. It's it's a DVD in a cardboard box. I mean, they're going to have enough.
I figured that time means that's when the UPS guy is going to knock on my door with my pre-ordered copy from Amazon, right?
Did you order it from Amazon already?
$106, that's pretty cheap.
That's not bad at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good.
So, Beth, are you planning on upgrading, or do you have a computer that's going to be able to run Leopard?
No, I'm going actually to buy a new computer, and I've been waiting for Leopard to decide what I was going to get, because I thought, well, it's stupid to buy one now and then have to buy Leopard. So I'm buying a new computer the last week of the month.
What are you going to get?
Well, I'm waiting for somebody to tell me what to get.
Depends on your needs. I mean, the needs. And
I have to have an Intel Mac for work because I have some stuff in my job now that requires that I use Windows. So I've just decided to get an Intel Mac so that I can still have my Mac.
Is this something that you want to take on?
The answer's obvious. You need an Octa-Core Mac Pro. 16 gigs of RAM, 3 terabytes of storage. Yeah,
I think probably what I'll end up getting is an iMac, because I haven't ever had one yet. So,
You've never had an iMac?
I never have, no. I've had two laptops. I've got a Mac Mini right now. I had my 7200 for years. You know, I'd still have that one if it would run OS 10. Love that computer. So, I don't know, but probably an iMac with, maxed out with RAM and hard drive and all those fun things that a girl loves.
When are you going to get yours, Guy, or have you already pre-ordered yours as well?
I pre-ordered the family pack last week.
And, Chad?
I will probably be picking mine up around the same time you do, I take it.
Yeah,
well, we can swing it, yeah.
If
I'm
obviously
available.
I'm going to be going to either Ann Arbor. I think Ann Arbor. I kind of liked that drive.
Mm-hmm.
For us, anyways.
Well, it's actually just about the same time wise.
Well, it's farther, but time wise, it's
a lot. Yeah, it's all highway.
Yeah, it's all highway.
Now, is Detroit even farther for you guys?
Oh yeah,
Detroit's on the other side of Ann Arbor.
Okay, because I thought I'd read somewhere they just opened up another Apple store.
Yeah, another freaking Apple store, and here we are in West Michigan, still waiting for one. Well, Lower West Michigan.
Lower West Michigan, we're still waiting for
an Apple store.
I think they opened another one in Troy, Michigan, I think is what
it was. Yeah, it's up there.
Yeah.
It's a brand new mall, too. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Leopard looks pretty cool. Obviously, next week's show is going to be recorded the day before it comes out, so we're still two episodes away from really being able to talk to it.
Yeah.
Talk to it. I'm getting retarded. What else is going on? What else did you put in our show notes this week, Guy?
Oh, let's see. Apple fires 800 employees for iPhone fraud.
What the heck? Oh, this is a great
apparently,
story.
There was a bunch of Apple employees. Like, one of the announcements they made was that all full-time Apple employees were going to get an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently about 800 of them tried to get the $100 rebate that was offered to everybody that paid $599 for the original 8-gigabyte iPhone. And apparently Apple kind of frowned on that, and so they may have gotten their $100, and they can probably use it to give to a good job search agency.
To supplement that unemployment check.
My question is, was this collusion, or is this just mass stupidity?
I thought Apple employed a bunch of smart people, but I suppose greed knows no bounds.
This is true.
I mean, I don't think greed is predicated on intelligence. Obviously.
I was going to say, we're pretty much proof of that.
Yeah. What a bunch of morons. Mm-hmm. You think this was a lot of Apple Store employees? Because it really didn't spell it out.
That's,
what do you think?
To me, that's what it sounds like.
I think it's a bunch of the retail employees who are trying to pull a fast one, and a lot of them got their hands caught in the cookie jar.
That's a lot of people, though.
That's a lot of people. I can't imagine 800 people losing 800 people from corporate.
No, I couldn't either.
There's no way.
Yeah.
But they probably make enough money where $100 is really not that much to them, whereas the retail people are like, ka-ching, payday.
I can put this towards Leopard.
You know, that's the funny thing. That's why I've saved, and it's right here, Chad. You can see this. That's my Apple Store $100 rebate. It's going towards Leopard, so I'm basically paying $30 for Leopard rather than, well, no, I'm not. I'm still paying $130. It's just like Apple's holding $100 for me until I'm ready for Leopard.
Wasn't that nice of them? What a bunch of sweet guys.
The other thing we were talking about, the Apple market share in, the Macintosh market share in the U.S. has increased to 8.1%, which, you know, that's great now. That makes Apple, number three now?
Number three.
That's cool, but I don't know. And this is more for John and Beth, because you guys have been in the trenches in the Mac universe as long as I have, or almost. Isn't it kind of nice knowing that not everybody is using the Macintosh? It kind of gives you this feeling of, well, you know what I mean.
I love it at work because everybody else has PCs. And I have tried for years to make my company all Mac, and I get resistance. But whose computer goes off the network all the time, and we have to call the computer geeks to come in, or the printer, or the power goes off, and so it resets all of the DNS numbers on all the PCs. Everybody's, can you print? No. Can you print? No. Beth, can you print? Of course I can print.
I got a Mac, for God's sake.
So they get tired of hearing it, but I don't care. I'm the boss.
What about you, John?
Well, I don't mind that not everybody uses these things. I guess I'm pretty selfish about this. As long as I can have one, that's all I really care about. But it's a funny thing. There's an internet cafe here called Wired Cafe. Yeah, big whoop. But
original name.
Yes, but I went when I first started going there a couple of years ago. I walked in there for the first time with my, I still had the Tangerine iBook of all things, and the owner came over to me. He saw me online. And he said, "Can you help me?" He says, everybody comes in here with Windows laptops. They can't get on. They just can't get on. And
that's a lot better than not being able to get off.
So. Yeah, well, I suppose. I don't really have an opinion on market share. I never quite believe that. I don't know how. I don't know where they get these figures.
I've always been a little suspicious in that, okay, that's the market share that they sold for that quarter.
Is that what that means?
Yes, because they can't really, how do they know how many active older Mac computers users. Are still, because Mac user, let's be honest, we don't upgrade our computers quite as often as the average PC user because our machines just tend to last a lot longer. We become attached to them, probably in an unnatural way. I've still got a bunch of old computers here that are used quite often. I've got a Mac Mini sitting on my wife's desk right behind me right now that's in use every day. And that's a G4 Mac Mini. So that's, 3 years old?
Mm-hmm.
It's still being used every day. Where's the market share for, I would skew the market share in this house. So I find those numbers a little dubious. I think Apple's market share and installed base is probably a lot larger than those figures. They can't measure that. They can't measure that.
Yeah. Well, see, when I was writing for Apple Links and writing about this stuff every day, it just baffled me all the time. I didn't see the point, or how it could accurately be measured.
I think the only reason this is important is for software and hardware manufacturers when they're going to allocate funds for developing software or hardware for Macintosh users. if we have such a small base of users, big companies like HP and Adobe, they're not going to spend that much time converting or creating new products for the Mac. They're going to spend those resources on the PC because they're going to get much more money back. But I think the writing is on the wall now that the Mac is growing, whereas companies like Dell and HP are selling less computers than they were previously. That tells me more people are buying Macs and less people are buying Windows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But where it gets hard, especially for me, is these big giant things like our 401k, for instance. In order for me to send in a report, I have to print it out and then go to a PC and do the report because they can't even deal with the Macintosh operating system over the network where you have to transfer all this information, and that's frustrating. And the big banks are the same way. That's why I'm having to get an Intel Mac, because I have to do this work, and they just, there's people in the world who don't even know what a Macintosh is, and that's scary.
That's true. That is true. But I think a lot of that is legacy, though, Beth. I think a lot of the incompatibilities that, as a business owner, that you're seeing is because historically Mac has had such a small market share, and that most businesses weren't employing or deploying those types of computers, so they didn't support it. That is slowly starting to change. I think another 5 years from now, if a bank doesn't support online banking on a Macintosh, that's going to be the exception rather than the norm.
Yeah.
At least that's my opinion. Mm-hmm. And I could be wrong.
Or hopefully they'll just support more open standards.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah, hurrah, hurrah.
So the last story we'll go over this week, and this is a big one for me, simply because I like music, and that's iTunes drops price on the DRM-free tunes to 99 cents. So instead of getting a better quality, no DRM for $1.29, it's 99 cent now, which is still more expensive than the Amazon's price. But nevertheless, it's a lot easier to browse iTunes to find the music I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of nice at the $1.29 because I knew immediately whether this song is going to be DRM or not.
Right.
Now I got to look for the little plus thing to see if it's DRM'd. So it's
Do you go out of your way to find songs that don't have DRM?
No, but I'm more apt to buy a song if I thought it was decent. If I listen to a song and I'm like, oh, that's okay, but it's DRM'd, I probably won't buy it. If I think, ah, it's okay, but there's no DRM in it, I'm much more apt to buy it because I'll think, well, at least it's not DRM. I can listen to it on anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important to me because as I amass more of a collection of iTunes store purchased songs, I'm not going to be able to move those to another platform. You know, heaven forbid Apple loses market share when it comes to iPods. I don't really care who makes my portable music player, to be honest. I don't think it really makes much of a difference. Apple makes the best right now with iTunes.
Right.
However, if another company comes out with a much better music player, I'm not adverse to change, to use that new music player.
As long as it's iTunes compatible.
Or just compatible with the files.
Music. Yeah. Right. Because I don't really give a crap about the device. I care about what I'm listening to on that device.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, once you hit play, who cares what it's on? Really? You know? I think the strong suit of both the iPhone, the iTouch, and the iPod is that it's so easy to manage your music in iTunes. So when you take that portable device, because really what all the iPods do is it gives you iTunes on the go. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because that's where your music library is. Whether it's podcasts, music, whatever it happens to be, that's where it's at. And wherever you're at, you have access in exactly the same directory. It's, you know where everything's
right.
at. You make these little playlists, and it's just easy. So that's what I'm looking for. The iPod does it right. Not too many other companies mm-hmm. are making a product that competes on those merits as well as Apple. So. All right, that's enough news. I'm bored with news already.
Good thing, because that's all we got.
Good. So, Beth.
Yes, Tim.
When did you start writing at MyMac.com?
In 1999.
What made you even want to? I mean, 1999 for me isn't very long ago. In fact, it seems like yesterday in some regards. But realistically, in 1999, the computers and the internet were dominated by boys.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very male thing. You know, it was hot rods. How are you upgrading your hot rods? Well, that was computers.
Yeah. Well,
And here comes this lady that, and you. What the hell? Where'd that come from?
Well, it was, for me, I had a boyfriend at the time, or no, it was even way before that, I think. Yeah, oh, it was way before that. Who had, when we got together, he was a Mac guy, and he had a little Fat Mac. Do you remember that computer?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And he was the one, and this was about 1992 or 93, and he introduced me to the Macintosh computer. And at that time, all we could do was play games on it. Well, we did a lot of other stuff, but, you know, and we had the screensaver Satori, I think it was called.
Oh, yeah.
And we upgraded. We got the first color monitor. We got the LC with System 7, and I still have it, my LC, in the closet here with this little tiny color monitor. But so I was, by the time... I was introduced to the internet, I was already fairly familiar with computers and how they worked, and it was not so much the computers that fascinated me, but the internet. I mean, I was just gobsmacked by the whole concept that, and I think in the first 15 or 20 articles I wrote for my Mac, every article I wrote, I was like, isn't the net cool? Isn't this cool? You know, I was like a puppy with two Peters. I was so excited. It was just every day. It was like, whoa, you know.
That's an interesting analogy.
Yeah.
So that was my interest, was not so much the computers, but the internet. And so I had to write about it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the internet is gender free or
gender neutral?
Neutral, yes, thank you.
Yeah, I've had some really interesting experiences with the internet because I think it's human nature to wonder, oh, is that a man or a woman you're talking to? But you could be anybody on the internet, and you still can be, you know. Interesting thing relating to the internet, and this is kind of off subject, but I tend to do this ramble on. My husband was telling me the other day that this site, and I don't do these MySpace and stuff like that things. It's just not my gig. But my husband was telling me that Facebook is controlled by the CIA, and I go, oh, come on, you're kidding. That's just, you know, one of those internet rumors, but there's some pretty compelling facts that point that is actually true, you know. So sometimes the internet can be a little bit scary, too, I think.
So you started writing for MyMac.com, and as the publisher of said magazine at the time, and still, actually, I can attest that your articles became quite popular very, very quickly. And you were really one of the vanguards of the Mac writers, that movement that lasted between, I would say, the end of 97 up through probably 2002.
Yeah.
Maybe going a little bit into 2003.
Yeah.
And there was a core group of Mac writers that really don't exist anymore.
Well, you know what happened.
Blogs. Well,
I didn't mean to butt in here, but...
Go ahead, John.
The dot-com implosion, everyone got fired. There wasn't any money in it.
And there was never money in it at my Mac.
Well, there was about to be money in it when I moved out here to New Mexico in 99, and there were people here and there, a few guys at Mac Central, for example, who were getting $1,500 for a 1,000-word column.
Yeah.
And that was happening 2 to 4 times a month, right? So you don't have to just do the math. You got a middle-class income right there. So, that was what propelled me out here. Oh, all I need is a modem, and there you go. And when Rodney O'Lane and I were hired at...
Mac Addict.
Mac Addict, we... They weren't paying us that much, but we were getting, I'll tell you, we were getting $350 a column. And that's, who gets $350 for a column today, you know? I mean,
even a print column.
Yeah.
You don't even get that in the New York Times, probably. Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm not sure. I'll bet you do. Might. I'll bet you do there, but I didn't know. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the Midland Press isn't paying $300 a column, I can tell you that right now.
And then all these people got fired by email mostly, but it was like it was like a tsunami and everything was just wiped clean. And I think that's what happened to the Mac writers, frankly.
So let's back up and get into John's story a little bit.
I didn't mean to cut
John
that there, but
lives in a nice home in Maryland, correct?
Lived in a nice home. Yeah.
Beautiful wife.
Yeah.
Good job.
Well, she had the good job.
Right. And you just pack up and move to Mexico, New Mexico.
Well, it wasn't
quite. What the hell were you thinking?
It wasn't quite that simple.
And for those of us who follow those articles and during that time frame, we knew the emotional turmoil that you were going through at the time.
It's only begun to settle down. It only took about 8 years. Things needed to be blown up. That was about the size of it. Things needed to be blown up.
Do you think that's true in all of life? We just every now and then need to blow up whatever it is and start over?
I don't think that everyone needs to do that, no. But if you are one of those people who do need to do that, God help you.
I sent John an email a few weeks ago, and I said, I'm just about ready to give it all up, move to Mexico and New Mexico and suffer for the next 10 years.
That is appealing sometimes. Yeah. I can attest to that. There's times that I watch the drivers going up and down busy roads, and I just think, I just want to get out of here. These people are freaking insane.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're crazy.
That's kind of what happened to me after my... I just got tired of going into DC and being on DC and being on freeways that were walled in.
Yeah,
I mean walled in. The same thing with Baltimore. They walled them in. I mean, you couldn't even see the trees. It was like, it was the automotive equivalent of being on an airplane and being on those flying aluminum sardine cans, you know, it just wasn't natural. It offended me. And I just had the notion that this was just no way to live. So I decided to move where there wasn't any pavement at all.
What drew you as a Mac user originally, John?
Well, that's a long story, and I don't really know what drew me in. I was, my wife and I were one of the first, my wife was working at Washington College in Chestertown, Maryland, and they were one of the first schools to adopt Macintoshes campus-wide. Of course, all you could get was, you know, that original little Mac, the funny little thing where you had to insert the floppy disk for the damn thing to run. And we had one, and I thought that was really cool to be able to. I was writing rock and roll songs back then, and I was using the printer to print gig posters and that kind of stuff. But like Beth, when we finally got an internet connection, it was like, oh, that's what this thing is for. A window onto the world, and it was just stupendous. And this is at 14.4 kbps too, mind you. So
I don't think the speed really meant as much back then. We all wanted it to be faster, but the internet, it was different then.
It was,
you know, it wasn't movies and
nothing. Nobody had the gear to handle that on the client end. Nobody could do that. It probably wasn't even a gleam in a programmer's eye. Nobody knew that that was going to be the case.
You know, there was a, I don't want to say it was a utopia, but it seemed like people were much more polite back then on the internet. They were much more apt to help you if you needed help. There wasn't so much, which I call the snarkiness of writing that we have nowadays. There was online communities, real communities like AOL and eWorld and bulletin board systems. And then there was the websites, the early websites like MyMac, like Apple Links, that kind of sprang up, and communities grew around those sites as well.
Yeah.
And I remember finding, actually I didn't find Apple Links, Apple Links found me, when the owner of the site, who I believe is still the owner if I'm not mistaken, sent me an email wanting to advertise on our magazine and on our website, as well as we had a links page that linked to a lot of different Mac websites.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to basically become our links page. So we would delete our links page, and if anybody hit the links button, it would go to Apple Links.
Uh-huh.
And that's how I found Apple Links, and shortly thereafter, that's how I started reading their new writer, John Farr.
Yeah, you were one of my first fans.
Absolutely. I'm still a fan. And I remember reading some of your early stuff, John, probably two or three articles in.
That's
thinking,
right.
There's something special about this guy. And I was really pissed that you weren't writing for me.
Your check is in the mail.
This guy's just really, really good. And I don't think there's really been another website writer that wasn't part of MyMac that I followed as religiously as I did John Farr's stuff for as long as I did.
People read me. People read me to see when I'm going to really crack up. I think that's,
we've been waiting a long time too, John.
I know.
We'll start with you, Beth. How long have you been a writer? Or was MyMac kind of the first breakout writing?
I'd always played around with writing, and when I lived up in Spokane, Washington, I wrote some stuff for the newspaper, you know, and stuff like that. So I'd always played around with it, and my kid's dad and I made some films way back when, and I helped write scripts, and I'd done some playwriting, you know, but it's collaborative type stuff. But yeah, MyMac was the first real, and then the internet, of course, had the ability to just fling you out to the world, and I can still remember the first fan mail I got. I mean, I was actually trembling when I was reading it, and you know, I was just so thrilled that somebody took the time to write to me and say, hey, I really like the story that you wrote. And it was a very humbling experience and very special. Yeah, but MyMac...
Well, I was happy to write it.
Yeah. But it was great to be on MyMac all the time. And I would back then, it was the monthly magazine, so I'd have all month to sit down and think about the column and write the column and change it and tweak it and send it to John and send it to Dell and send it to Marty and say, what do you think of this? It's going to be read by people, you know.
When did you discover John Farr? And John, when did you discover Beth? When she
emailed me.
I did. I was a fan. I sent John fan mail, so... And I said, it's so good to know there's some Mac hippies around. And he liked that I called him a Mac.
Mac hippie, yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Somebody should quickly check, see if that URL's taken. MacHippie.com.
I think there was such a domain. There really was.
Nope.
Oh, 10 years ago.
Guys quickly registering it.
I don't want to take away from Beth, but I just registered igottagetoutmore.com. So.
Oh, right.
Really? That's not... Wow, I can't believe that was still there. Kidding. That seems like a natural.
Well, there you go, .com is taken. Okay.
So I remember...
Sorry, back to Beth.
I don't remember exactly when I realized what was happening. But there came a point where I realized something really special was going on what we call then the Mac Web. And there was a core group of writers. And I mean, I was in the middle of this, but I wasn't necessarily one of those great writers. I was more of a support specialist. Yeah. I supported the great writers. There was Beth, of course, and John Farr, John Martellaro, Del Miller, Ronnie O'Lane. There's more, but that's really the core group of people who kind of pushed forward this notion of great writing on the internet.
Well, we were kind of
one. Of course, it was about Max, but we weren't writing just about Max either.
And then, but there was this other. There was kind of another group too, and they'd been around forever. And they were David Every, and they were Andy. What was his name? Intaco.
Inaco.
And there was that group of people too that were writing. What?
Roger Bourne. I don't want to leave Roger Bourne.
Roger and
Adam Angst.
Yeah, and who was talking about? Oh, last week you were talking about Tidbits, right? That they'd been.
Yeah, Tidbits has been around forever.
Yeah.
And they're still going strong, still great writing.
But it was the Macworld 2000 when they introduced OS 10, and John Farr was there, Del Miller was there, Marty was there, Tim was there, Rodney was there, and I was there. And I think that was kind of the acme, the whole peak of the thing, when we all had the opportunity to get together at that event. It was just one of my fondest memories. It was a highlight of my entire life, was going to San Francisco that January and meeting all you guys. It was something else.
You know, one of my fondest memories of that is, I believe, walking either to or from a bar/restaurant with... I know that Beth was there. I was there. I think Adam was with us.
Mm-hmm.
And who was the lady?
My friend Karen from Chicago. And I knew her from a chat site that I used to go to.
Well, we used to have a weekly chat there.
Oh, that's right.
My Mac had a weekly chat there.
Yeah.
What was that called?
World Without Borders.
World Without Borders. They're actually still going. And I jumped on it for the first time in like 5 years,
really?
Just a couple days ago. Well, a couple weeks ago now.
Huh.
And I had to re-register my name. It expired, and like three people knew who I was. I thought, well, that's kind of sad, actually. same people. Wow, Tim, it's been a while. It's half a decade. So I remember walking down a street, on the sidewalk more specifically, and a homeless guy comes up and asks us for some money. And Beth stops and gives him money with the condition that he has to tell her his story. And we stand there for 10 minutes as this man is telling Beth his story. At the end of which, Beth gives him a hug, and I think he gave him like $5 or $10.
Probably, yeah.
And we moved on. That really stood out in my memory.
That's so it's not charity, see? It's an exchange.
Right.
And you know mm-hmm. probably the worst thing about being homeless, Beth?
What?
It ruins camping for you.
Yeah.
It really does.
Oh. Well, I remember Del Miller.
Everybody's choking. Nobody wants to laugh out loud on that. Oh, that's... I'm going to laugh, but that's bad, Tim.
Del said, I'm just coming next year. I'm bringing a blanket, and I'm sitting down here on the street. And I'm going to just sit here in my blanket shivering all day long. And at the end of the day, I'm going to take the money I made and go, you know, get a room at this fancy motel, he said, because I know I can make a bundle here in San Francisco.
Probably.
Yeah.
It was hard for me to describe, like last year at the Macworld Expo, and I think I was telling you this, Guy, because Guy and I and Larry, his brother, were pretty much together the whole expo, right,
yeah.
Guy? To your detriment, I know.
Larry had fun.
My poor sore feet.
I did too.
Trying to explain Macworld Expo 2000 and how magical it was. I mean, it was the pinnacle for me.
It was dramatic.
It was.
I mean, you had Rodney Lane got fired. and you took him in. He was in your hotel room. It was like a refugee. He was like a Mac Writer refugee, broadcasting for my Mac instead of wherever he got fired from.
Here's my pirate signal going through my Mac now. For those who don't know who Rodney O'Lane is, he passed away. He left us a while back. And if you go up to the archives page of MyMac.com, scroll down to Rodney O'Lane, you'll find almost everything that he wrote on the internet. There's a couple gaps in there, but even if it wasn't from MyMac.com, I went out of my way to find it from these old websites, including MacAddict, and got permission and reprinted it at MyMac.com. So his legacy is still there. But yeah, he had got fired for using... Oh, I can't even remember now.
I thought he got fired for...
Speculation?
I thought he got fired. No, that's why I got fired. I got fired for linking to Apple Insider in an article I wrote for Apple Links, because Apple Insider was a rumor site. And somebody at Apple picked up the phone and talked to Apple Links, and that was it. I was gone.
I would have told them to go fuck themselves myself, but that's just me.
Oh, explicit.
Oh, crap. Now we have to use the explicit tag. God damn it.
But I thought Rodney got fired because he had the temerity to edit someone who shall remain nameless. And he had permission to do so, but he edited a piece that someone else had written, and they didn't like that he had done that. And that's what happened to him.
Well, and he posted an article that they disagreed with, and instead of allowing their writers to have the creative freedom, yes, to post their opinion, they were gone. And of course, me being me, when I believe it was you, Beth, who called me,
I
correct?
Did. Yeah.
Yeah, and you said Rodney O'Lane just got fired. You guys were in the same hotel, mm-hmm, at that point, mm-hmm, right? And he just got fired for posting this, and that, of course, pissed me off. And I said, Rodney, come up here. We're going to post this at MyMac.com right now. And we did.
Yes, we did. I came over that night, too. And we got delightfully, yep, drunk.
Yes, we, yes, did. I have a picture still. It's a real crappy one of me sitting on a window ledge. The inside window ledge. I don't want people to think that I was that crazy. With a beer in my hand. And I looked very young and thin. And, you know, I'm old and fat now, so... But still, it was a magical time. I wish that we could recreate it, but some things you can't. Some things you just have to hold on to the fond memories, realizing they're not going to happen again. But that's not to say that other magical moments or special events won't happen in the future. And obviously, I hope that in another upcoming expo, I'll have another experience, although different, that can at least rival that show. Any chance on either John or Beth going to another Macworld?
Oh, in the future? I would love to. I would do it in a heartbeat. Yeah,
me too.
I'm getting to the point where I hate to travel. I had to go to Florida a couple of weeks ago, and because the company was paying for it, I booked a first class ticket, and I've never flown first class in my life, and so I'm ruined now. I just simply can't get on an airplane unless it's first class now. So I don't know if I can afford it.
No more flying in the cattle cart for
Beth,
huh?
No, you get free drinks in first class, you know.
Usually.
We do in the back, too, except for it costs us a dollar.
Well, that's kind of like free.
That's kind of free. Here's a good question for everybody, I guess. Let's say I became an instant millionaire. A lot of people say, well, would you still... Obviously, I would continue MyMac.com. But I would have the resources to put into the site that I always wished I had. What would you want to see at that site if I had the resources to do it and you were going to be a part of it? What would you see yourself doing... if, again, those resources were there. We'll start with Guy.
Well, unless I also had...
I mean, let's assume that I've got enough money, though, that you can literally quit your job make more money with health insurance, retirement plan, all that stuff.
$1 million.
$1 million. It'd have to be more than that, just for the health insurance alone.
Yeah, especially considering how old I am. I would love to be able to just write full time. That's something that I just can't do now. I think I would get more into both podcasting and vidcasting. I always wanted to do like a geek cooking show with just completely stupid recipes that are easy to put together, and you know, not this fancy stuff that takes you 6 hours to make. It's like, okay, you pull this stuff off the grocery shelf, you throw it in a big pot, and look what you got. You know, I mean, that kind of thing. Well, he liked it.
Yeah, that fit in perfectly at my Mac.
Yeah, sure it would. I got a great meatloaf
like
recipe.
Macintosh-shaped spatula.
And I've got a really, really good Mexican dip recipe.
Chad. Now, it's a little difficult for Chad here because even though Chad's been part of the podcast almost since the beginning, he really doesn't contribute a whole lot to
the writing side.
The
of
writing.
It.
I think you had like, what, two?
I probably had two or three articles.
Two or three articles, yeah. And I believe both of those are probably reviews.
Yeah,
reviews. But I would have the resources throw at you, say, I want you at My Mac full time. You're going to quit your job.
Mm-hmm.
No more working for a big evil company.
Yeah.
That makes drugs.
Yeah.
That starts with a P.
Well, I don't work for them, but I am pimped out to them.
Yes,
so.
You're pimped out to them. What would you see yourself doing?
I would see myself writing a lot more reviews and really digging into the hardware and software in a lot more depth because I'd have the time to actually learn it to the extent that I feel is necessary. Because part of my issue is that I do write for a living and I get paid for it. And so when I get home, it's hard for me to sit down and write some more.
Beth.
Yes, Tim. I would like to see some money put into one of the things that I love about My Mac now is the blogs. I love to read the blogs, and I especially like the comments. But I would like for you to buy the software that it would take for you to set that up so when somebody made a new comment, you could actually sign in and you could see which of the blogs had new comments. And
yeah, that's something that I've been wanting
for
a long
time. And I know that, you know, that's it's a software issue. But you said you had if you had the money, that's what I'd like to see, some improvements like that in the website itself.
What about enticing you to, well, we don't want to get too much into what you do out in the real world, but you run a company, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. Yeah.
We would have the opportunity to – you would have the opportunity to hand that off to someone else and concentrate on My Mac if I could throw enough cashola your way to make that happen. What would you see yourself doing?
Oh, you mean as a writer?
Yeah, well, not necessarily as a writer.
Just
but
as a contributor.
As a contributor. I said I want you to work at My Mac full time.
Oh.
Here's $250,000 a year. What would you see yourself doing?
Well, I'm real good at sitting behind a desk and telling other people what to do.
So you're thinking of doing some video tutorials for My Mac then?
I call it delegating. I'm really good at delegating.
Delegating.
Yeah.
I'm pretty good at that myself. Usually I'm delegating to myself, but, you know, that's another matter.
I would really love to have a lot more time in my life right now to write. I love to write, but I haven't had anything to say that wasn't extremely painful for a long time, so I just kind of got out of it. And pretty soon, maybe I'll be ready to do something again.
Yeah, sometimes that the ability to write through the pain actually helps heal the pain. Just something to keep
in mind.
I
know, but
everybody's different. But
It's kind of like everybody tells everybody else. I mean, and there's so many blogs out there now, and there's so many people able to express themselves, and I think that's a wonderful thing, but it's not something I want to do.
Do you think the personal nature of a lot of blogs is almost leading to it becoming impersonal?
Yeah.
I thought that for a while, that so many people are saying almost too much. without any consequences of what it means to write what you're writing and what to, and what you're saying.
I think the internet has really shortened my attention span. I mean, if something doesn't grab me in the first three sentences, I'm moving on.
I'm sorry, what was that?
There's so much content out there, you know. Content is king.
But finding the good stuff is still not easy.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. I mean, thank goodness for bookmarks, but...
Yeah.
I mean, I've got a lot of bookmarks, but I probably go to the same 20 sites a day, and that's it. It's very rare when I kind of dig deeper into my bookmarks and go back to some of the sites that I bookmarked for whatever reason 2 years ago and go, wow, this was a really good site. That's why I bookmarked it. I don't usually do that. What about you, John? I kicked $300,000 your way and...
Oh, you can't pay me that much. You can't pay me that much. You only have $1 million to run the whole site.
Well, that was what Guy said. I was planning on $30-40 million.
I'd take 50. 50
$50. $50 grand.
Well, hell, let me grab my wallet, Chad. He said
50. 50 grand would be fine. I would probably do just what I'm doing now, only I'd do it better because I wouldn't have to do websites for real estate agents and stuff like that.
That's got to be exciting.
I would... I'm blogging now, and that's for a writer. That's kind of like slitting your wrists in public. I'm just giving it away. You know, I'm just bleeding onto the digital airwaves here, and I would feel much better about that if I had a salary.
John, I've always thought of you as a writer's writer. Unfortunately, pretty much undiscovered to this point. I always kind of figured that, you know, 5 days after your death, Oprah Winfrey's going to pick up your book and go, "This is my book of the month."
No.
But
I just,
to me, you are a writer's writer. Do you think the blogs and being a writer of your caliber? Posting blogs, do you think that takes away from the time or saps needed energy for projects that would be more meaningful?
I've been wrestling with that for the last couple of years, and my immediate response would be, yes, I do think so. I do think so. I think what is dangerous, and I do mean this seriously, what's dangerous about the internet and writing on the internet is that it's immediate gratification. It's immediate gratification, and like I may have something in my head that needs to come out, and my first impulse is to run to my blog interface and throw something up there, and that's fine. It's writing, but it doesn't get seasoned. It doesn't get edited. It doesn't end up in a form that it's not to be monetized unless I've got thousands of people coming to the website and I'm selling advertising. So, and the other thing that's dangerous is when people talk about communities and affecting change by email campaigns and educational campaigns and this kind of stuff. You email a senator, you leave a comment on somebody else's blog, and you think you've done something, but you haven't really done a damn thing. You just barked like the dogs that Beth's got over there. It's just like barking dogs. And
yeah, wouldn't have, blogs probably should have been named Barks, really. Seriously, I completely agree with you, John. I think that too many great, really great writers are squandering their talent by writing blogs that had they taken the time, and I like your comment seasoning, had they taken the time and fleshed out the idea and edited it and expanded it, it would be so much better. Maybe they could have made more money on it, maybe not. But the writing itself, in its pure form, would be so much better.
Well, this is a big question, see, because you get into marketing, and I'm really terrible at the nuts and bolts of marketing my stuff, and I honestly don't know what to do. It's just a big. I mean, one of the biggest industries out there is the how to make a living as a writer industry. And I honestly don't know. But I have at this particular moment, I think being online and blogging for a writer is probably better than not doing it because of the possible exposure. But beyond that, I honestly don't know. I just don't know.
For those who want to read more about John, he's got some books out there. How many books have you read now?
Well, no, actually, there's just one actual printed book that people bought.
Oh, okay. I'm letting the cat out of the bag a little early on another thing then, aren't I?
No. Well, there's some e-books in the works, and there's one that's finished that might come out soon. But, I have my Buffalo Lights.
And I can attest that that is a fabulous book. It's really a collection and a bunch of tales from your writings at AppleLinks as well as your own site, or is this pretty much just the AppleLinks stuff?
It's a lot of the AppleLinks stuff, but it's nothing about computers. It's about what am I doing with my life and where are we going and here we're doing that and oh my God, we did it and oh no.
This is a life story.
Well, it works out to be a life story, yeah.
For those who want to read more about that and buy the book, and you're going to really like it. And on the back of it is this little blurb from me, and it says a masterpiece, and I have to I hold to that. It is a masterpiece. Go up to jhfarr, that's with two R's, jhfarr.com. Or just go to My Mac, check out our archives, and find John Farr. You'll find links.
Right,
there as
and
well.
you can Google Buffalo Lights and get
Buffalo Lights. Mm-hmm. Yep, it's a fabulous book. Can you get an e-book too?
Yes, it's in e-book form. I have it published through BookLocker.com, and you can go there and.
I think you sent me originally the e-book, and then I ordered. Now, this is how good this is, people. I got a free ebook of this. John sent me a free ebook. And I took the time, after reading a good quarter of it, again, because these are articles that I had read originally in their original form, I went and bought the book.
I did, too. I got a free book, and I bought one.
It's fabulous. It really is.
I'm waiting for the movie.
It's well worth your time. I'm waiting for the movie. I heard Brad Pitt's up for it, so.
Well...
So,
I have
J.H. Farr.
That's right. I'll be doing lots of other stuff. I'm finally getting relaxed enough to where I might actually be able to do the nuts and bolts and get some stuff out there. People can always go to my blog, which is at farfeed.com, and read all kinds of really weird stuff.
I've been And for those who don't think that John's still doing any Mac writing... just a couple months ago, he posted a review of Adobe InDesign CS3 at MyMac.com. Before that, Dreamweaver CS3. And he blogs occasionally as well, so make sure you keep looking at MyMac.com. And every now and then, you'll see a new John Farr pop up.
I got some more reviews coming out at MyMac, too.
John thought he was done with the Mac world, and somehow, just when I think I'm out,
drag him back in,
suck me back in.
Well, the Intel MacBook that appeared at my door one day made a big difference. Let me tell you, that made
any,
a big difference.
Any future writing?
You know what I'd love to see when you going back to talking about on the site, because I got real excited a couple years ago about a lady that was doing this, that was reading stories on the internet. And I know it just kind of seemed, but I've heard John on the radio over there, over by where he lives, and he'd go on and he'd read his stories. And as much fun as it is to sit down with a John Farr story, to hear him read the story is just fabulous. And I'd love to see that as a part of my map, too. would be those audio things, and then you could be the website for the blind or something, you know?
We could have more of that. You could have more, I don't know if you'd call them podcasts, but audio blogs, mm-hmm. more yeah. audio. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anytime you want to do that, John, obviously, you've got free reign of the place, John. Just wipe your yep. feet before you
come in. Keys to the kingdom.
Anything coming up from you, Beth?
I'd love to do something.
I mean, I know your life is kind of busy at the
yeah,
moment.
Yeah, I've had an idea for a long time. I have a chair in my office. It's a brown chair, and for some reason, people sit in that chair and they tell me things. And I've always wanted to write a collection of stories called The Brown Chair.
That would be cool.
That would mm-hmm. be neat. So. Yeah.
I mean, the imagery of that alone right mm-hmm. there kind of inspires the imagination.
Yeah. And so maybe I'll just start playing around with that when I get some time and throw some stuff up at my Mac and see how it goes over.
Kind of throws my plans out a little bit. I had a whole series planned called The Brown Stain, but I think it would have been a totally different concept.
Yeah, yeah. We'll leave it there.
Yeah, we'll just leave that one sitting there. So I want to thank Beth and John for coming on and spending some time with us this week. I really appreciate you guys taking the time. I know that, you know, you got to work around schedules.
And dogs.
We're pretty rigid. What the hell
That's
is that?
That's my Labrador. He sounds like what's...
He sounds kind of like you yelling in the background.
He sounds like that from Star Wars. That Wookiee or the
yeah, I was gonna say like an alien or something.
Yeah,
Chewbacca.
Get off the damn computer. We have to pee.
We want more dog treats.
But I want to thank John and Beth for joining us this week. We got to do this again.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed this. Breaking away from just talking about Macs, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It gets boring for me after a while. I've only been doing it for almost 13 years now, so... Oh, my God.
I'm really honored that you asked me to be on, Tim, and I'll...
Well, I'm glad you did.
It was fun. I'd like to do it again.
And, John, I want to thank you once again for the song that you contributed to our
that was
podcast.
Great.
That was totally
ad-lib.
I still go back and listen. I loved it. Mm-hmm. I loved it. It cracked me up, and yet it really showed your talent. You definitely need to do more in the audio world because you have a very rich voice that's great to listen to, and you have a lot of skills. So don't let it languish. Use it. Do something with it because you're very talented, John, and I'm real happy to know.
I'll have to send you a bigger check.
Guy Searle, thanks for taking the time to join us
again.
Oh,
I love being here. Oh, by the way, before we go... anyone who tries to get MacHippie.com or MacHippie.org, you're too late.
You're too late, John.
I already grabbed him.
Guy Searle has some using iWeb articles going up at MyMac.com.
I think there's a few graphics
part
in it, too.
A few just... part two went up on the 17th, and we've got part three and four in the queue, so those will be going up next week and the week after, and I believe you even have more coming soon.
He also collects obscure URLs, so in case you're looking for something.
I'm sorry, MacHippie.com just appeals to me for some strange reason.
You know, I knew that we were going to be doing the show with Beth tonight,
mm-hmm.
and I was remembering that the whole homeless thing that I kind of made a joke of earlier, but I thought of a really funny video, and I might still do this, even though mm-hmm. anybody listening to the show is already going to know what it is. I was going to call it Homeless Mac User. And it's just somebody walking around. No dialogue hardly mm-hmm. at all. Just somebody walking around with a Mac, begging people to plug in the Mac. Not for money or food. Just for a little juice.
You can make the guy kind of look like Red Skeleton.
Well, it was going to be me, actually. I thought that would be stupid, but yet funny.
Mm.
You can have like four episodes of it. And it's basically the same thing every time. It's... just a guy carrying around a Macintosh who's homeless and just wants to plug it in. Why that's funny,
we'll work,
I don't know.
We'll work for Wi-Fi.
We'll work for Wi-Fi.
God.
See? The idea
I wonder if homelessmac.com is available.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
I'm sure. Oh, God.
For the next 5 minutes. What, does monster.com have a sale going on domains right now?
HomelessMac.com, MacHobo.com.
.org, .us.
Chad Perry is leaving us for maybe a month.
Yeah.
Maybe longer, maybe shorter. Oh, we just don't know.
Oh, gosh, I hope not any longer than that.
Well, we're going to miss you while you're gone. We appreciate you coming on. We could have had him last week, but like I said last week, I was just too damn lazy to pack everything up and go over there. But it's kind of weird not podcasting with you, but by the same token, it's nice when you come back after an absence.
It is. And I think this is also a great opportunity to do something that you and I have wanted to do for a long time, which is
transfer the show.
Not only transfer, but also get more of the staff on the show.
Well, that's something that we've been wanting to do, and my concern was, would people be able to do it? Because we do have kind of a rigid timeline as much as when we recorded at your house, your wife wants to know when it's going to happen. And when we recorded at my house, like we're doing tonight, my wife has to basically pack up 3 kids and leave. And that's not an easy thing to coordinate sometimes. Yeah. So... Well, I'll miss you while you're gone. We'll soldier on next week. Yep. Let me check my schedule. I believe the only person that we have scheduled right now is Richard Lefko, Rich Lefko.
Oh, cool.
Of course, he's one of the newer writers at MyMac.com. He came in because of the podcast because he was a contest winner.
Yep.
He won Microsoft Office, I believe.
Oh, he was the guy that won MS Office at the Grand Rapids store?
No. He was a telephone call that we made. We called him, one of the first people that we'd called during the whole we're going to call you if you're a contest winner thing, which we probably should get back into. That's kind of fun. But for the meantime, at least for the foreseeable future, we're going to have a lot more MyMac.com staff members on, past and present. I like to get some of the people that we haven't heard from in a long time. Yep. Some people I'd really like to track down, like Barbara Bell, catch up on with her. She used to write the starting line column up through probably 98, 99. So there's a lot of we have a lot of people. One of our old writers, Dustin Roberts, is now the president of the Star Wars fan club.
Oh, wow.
And he got his start at writing at MyMac.com. He actually took over the starting line column. Go figure.
Is that a paid position?
The Star Wars fan club?
Star Wars fan club.
Fan club president, yeah.
He's like on every Star Wars website out there. He's insane. But,
you know, it almost goes without saying.
Things and... Yeah. Actually, he emailed me saying, hey, if you can get me a free Mac, I can write a column every week about switching from a PC to a Mac because I don't use a Mac anymore. And maybe you can find an advertiser to give me a free Mac, and then we'll write. And I said, yeah, good luck with that.
What did you say?
Well, let me know how that works out.
Do you want this?
And maybe we can put, like, a sticker of Boba Fett on it.
Snatch the Mac from my desktop and your transfer to the dark side will be complete.
Instead of a bong when it starts up, it goes...
I'll name our external hard drive Chewy. Okay, we're going to wrap up the show. We're going to jump over to David Cohen's Fenestration segment. I have no idea what it's about this week because I didn't read his notes
or
anything.
Hopefully you downloaded it in time.
I'm going into it blind. I downloaded in time. I learned my lesson. So once again, thanks Beth, John, Guy, and who am I missing? Chad behind me.
Yep.
We'll be back next week. And just when you thought you were done with me, I come back for one more segment without Guy, Chad, John Farr, or Beth Locke. I just wanted to cover a couple things before we move on to the fenestration segment. Last week or the week after, I was talking about not being able to use custom ringtones. In particular, I had the Darth Vader theme playing whenever my wife called. That's right. It's working once again. Okay, stop. iPod, stop. Come on. That's enough. Okay, there should be a way for me to... That was actually a custom ringtone. How did I do that? This is an updated 111 iPhone. It's never really been, well, no hardware hacking at all. The only hacking I ever did was putting custom ringtone on there. That one, as a matter of fact, before. And that stopped working. iToner. Yay, iToner took care of the problem. It works with 111. It is a Ambrosia software product. It costs like, I don't know, $12. Something like that. But you can use a trial version. I did. I haven't paid for it yet, but I plan to because it actually works. It allowed me to put the Darth Vader theme back into my iPhone as a custom ringtone. And I might put a couple more. I don't know yet. But it's still really cool. and I'm really appreciative of Ambrosia Software's efforts to get iToner to work with the new iPhone software. So kudos to them. I also wanted to go through a reader email. Miriam's from Slovakia. Sorry. It's a long night. By the way, that noise right there? Yeah, that's the scroll wheel on my mouse. I'm using a Logitech. What is, it's an older mouse, too. Logitech. My eyes aren't what they used to be. Mouseman Optical Dual Sensor. Model number M-BL63B. It's actually my favorite mouse. I love it. The only thing I hate is that. I hate that sound. It's just really annoying. Marion sent a pretty long email, and I'm going to kind of chop it up a little bit. But he said he just got done listening to the podcast number 148. That was the last podcast. And he wanted to send us an email about the iPod software update. He purchased a new iPod Classic recently, an 80 gig version. And he's kind of disappointed with some of the features, mostly the cover flow, which listed album artwork by artist, which, especially in his case, he's a big fan of the movie soundtrack, so he was kind of sad because it didn't actually work that way. The number of artworks was a few times higher than in iTunes, he says, which was not only confusing, but even slowed the iPod down. And we all talked about last week the problem with cover flow on the new iPod Classics, that it was slowing the iPods down considerably. Another bug concerned video playback, he writes. See, as all of his videos except for podcasts in the movie subfolder of the menu, he decided to remove the video folder from the menu and leave it just in the movie subfolder. As it turns out, it was a bad decision, he writes, because when he started playing a widescreen movie, the letterbox was white, which is really strange, I agree. Being quite a video geek, he writes, he'd never seen anything like that before. The solution, he says, was quite simple. He just had to put the movies or the videos back in the main folder, and it all was okay. He says the last, which was really kind of disturbing to him, was an actual hard drive problem. More specifically, whenever he was going through his photos, the drive started making sound every single time he'd push the next button, go to the next picture. He writes, I'm not sure if it was just because of my iPod, but the volume of the hard drive noise is quite high, especially audible in a quiet environment when he's not wearing his headphones. Obviously, it's cranking through the hard drive, it's spinning it up, and that's not a sound you really want to hear from a hard drive-based iPod, because that's usually something that's going to cause you problems in the future. He wasn't sure if it's just a case of that it has a metal case and that maybe the old plastic ones just absorb the sound a lot better or what. Well, he says the point is the new software update 102 fixed all the bugs. CoverFlow works now, and actually by compilation, so that works a lot for him. Works real well for him, I should say. I'm assuming that the hard drive noise, he writes, let's see, about the hard drive noise, in my opinion, it is normal. It is not, like, noisy. It's just audible in a quiet environment. I don't know. I don't know, Marion. That doesn't sound good. You hear, if you have, like, an external FireWire hard drive, you do hear it accessing itself sometimes, but usually they get louder as they either get more fragmented or there's a problem with that hard drive. I haven't heard too many people complaining about hard drive noise in the new iPod Classics. Maybe John Farr could give us an update on that, whether he hears, because he's got the same model, the 80 gig iPod Classic. So, Nemo, if you're hearing this, do you hear hard drive noise coming from your, in a quiet environment, not wearing headphones, do you hear the hard drive noise coming from your iPod? I'd be curious to know, and I'm sure Marion would be very curious to know. If it's a problem, and to me, it really does sound like there's something wrong with his iPod. I would seriously consider maybe taking it back, telling Apple that it sounds like the hard drive's going to fail and you want a replacement. I mean, it's brand new, so they should have no problem giving you a replacement. But anyways, that pretty much wraps up his email. Looks like the 102 software update fixed the cover flow bugs, also fixed the video problems that he was having, and we'll see about the hard drive noise. I don't really think that the hard drive noise is a good thing. You shouldn't hear the hard drive as it's spinning like that. So here comes David Cohen's fenestration. Thanks again for listening, and I would really appreciate you guys sending any email. I love getting email, and it makes it feel worthwhile doing the show when you hear from the people that are listening. Love to read some of it on the show. Send it to tim@mymac.com, and I'll get it read. Or you can send a audio message. Just pick up a telephone and dial this number and leave a message. And you can leave it in like 5 minutes if you wanted to. The number is 801-938-5559. Overseas, just put a 1 before that. 1-801-938-5559. And we'll put your audio on the show. So here comes David. Everybody have a great weekend.
Hello, my name is David Cohen, and I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, my guide to using a Mac in a Windows world. Welcome to Fenestration 39 for the MyMac Podcast 149. I'm going to spend today's session talking about the use of a PowerMac G4 in an office Windows environment. This was something that came about for me recently because I acquired a bicycle. I decided that in order to try and be a bit fitter, I wanted to cycle to and from my office. Now, I don't work in the office all the time, but probably about 50% of my time is spent there, and the office is around 6 miles from my house. I didn't really want to be cycling to and from work on a regular basis, carrying a laptop over my shoulder. I was too worried that I would either fall off or have an accident and damage the laptop. My MacBook is my own purchase, it wasn't provided by my office, and therefore if I was to have an accident and damage it, I would be liable for all of the costs. So I thought it would be better to have a Mac permanently installed in the office that I could use when I was there. Using .Mac and flash drives, I can pretty much make sure that I've always got my data with me, so that's not a problem, it was just the physical machine. Naturally, in a Windows environment, I thought initially that an Intel Mac might be a good way to go, but the problem was cost. I was going to have to fund this machine myself, and that meant that I wanted to make sure the financial outlay was minimal. A quick search on eBay for used Intel Mac Minis revealed that they were actually beyond what I was prepared to spend. So I decided to go the old school route and buy an older PowerPC Macintosh. I settled on a PowerMac G4 dual processor 450 MHz. Now, if you ever look at low-end Mac or somewhere like that and have a look at the various different models of PowerMac G4, you'll quickly appreciate there was about 5 different boxes that were all called the same. Now, the Gigabit Ethernet model that I purchased was one of the earlier ones. It came after the Sawtooth, the AGP machine, but before the Digital Audio and then the Quicksilver, and it was with the Quicksilver that the machines actually changed substantially internally. So a Gigabit Ethernet is a fairly old machine. It was available from Apple for a period covering July 2000 through to January 2001. So it's certainly not a new machine. I chose this machine because PowerMacs on eBay tend to be priced according to the megahertz rating of the processor. Now, buying a dual processor 450 MHz meant that I wasn't really paying any sort of premium for the dual processor, but I was getting a machine that at a low price that actually performs pretty much as well as a 700 or 800 MHz machine would, due to the fact it's got two processors rather than one. OS X is very good at taking advantage of multiple processors and will stream its threads across the pair of them, so you do tend to get much better performance. In order to bring the machine up to scratch, all I had to do was to replace the hard drive with a faster, more modern and larger unit and add some memory. My total investment to bring the machine ready for use was around $150. So once I had the machine up and running and installed under my desk in my office, I proceeded to install a new copy of Tiger onto it, and then I installed iWork 08, Office 2004 and a copy of the Citrix client for Macintosh. Now, I have talked about Citrix in the past, but just to refresh listeners' memories, Citrix is a technology that basically allows a Windows session to run in a server, and you access that session from a remote machine over a network. So effectively, what you see on your screen is a representation of the Windows session on the server, and you use your keyboard and screen and mouse to interact with that session as if it was local to your computer. Citrix servers are capable of running many hundreds of these sessions at once, so they can service many users. And the advantage is it allows a network administrator to provide a specific Windows configuration to users, and to really allow those users to access those sessions over a very small network connection, such as a remote access connection or something of that sort. Now, we have a Citrix server in our office, so by running the Citrix client for Macintosh on this new machine, I was able to access Outlook, Microsoft Office versions that were running on our network, any of our specific intranet applications that don't tend to work in Safari, I can access using Internet Explorer on the Citrix session, which means that I'm really able to use everything that I need to be able to use in the office. However, I have found in actual use that I don't use Citrix that much, because I use a lot of the local Macintosh applications to actually do my document editing and interaction with the network. Obviously, that's a good thing, because I appreciate that many users might not have a Citrix server that they can access for their own network purposes. So if you don't, it's very fortunate. In fact, you can get by quite well with just the Macintosh applications. What I do is I use Microsoft Office 2004 for most of my Office documents. The reason for that is that internally at my company, we haven't upgraded to Office 2007 yet for the Windows machines. We're actually using Office XP or Office 2000 generally. Most of you users haven't been upgraded to Office 2003. So being able to run Office 2004 for Mac means that I can access their documents and make edits and changes to them nice and easily. Performance on the dual processor 450 for Office is fine, provided you have plenty of memory. I use iWorker 8 because occasionally I do get documents from clients that are in the Office 2007 format. And as I've discussed previously, there is currently no solution from Microsoft for dealing with those sorts of documents. Fortunately, iWorker 8 deals with them quite nicely, and I tend to find that is all I need in order to be able to access those documents and to make changes to them or whatever. One other reason I use Office 2004 is because it gives me Entourage, which is a client that allows me to access our local Exchange server. Exchange is Microsoft's mail system, and typically users would access that on the Windows side using a client called Outlook. I hesitate to say that Entourage is the Macintosh version of Outlook, because while it's used to access Exchange server, it actually doesn't function quite as closely with Exchange as Outlook does. This, I have found, actually does cause quite a few problems and makes Entourage not as good a solution as Outlook is on the Windows for accessing Exchange Server. But I will devote a future fenestration to that topic in some detail so I can really explore those issues. On that topic, it's worth noting that today Apple has announced the features and availability for OS 10.5 Leopard, and it will be interesting to note that TextEdit, the text editor and word processor that ships natively with OS 10, will be able to open, read and write Office 2007 documents. So, yet again, going back to my repeated theme of Microsoft's really poor handling of this particular situation, we'll have a situation where a free bundled word processor with an operating system from a competitor is able to read and write documents in their latest native format directly on the machine, when Microsoft has not been able to ship a product that can do that. All in all, I'm very happy with my Power Mac G4. It does everything I need it to, and it really is a sterling office workhorse. Of course, if I want to do something really demanding on it, then it's going to struggle, because a machine of that age and vintage with that level of horsepower is not going to be able to do everything that I might want to do, such as heavy Photoshop editing or any sound editing, anything to do with media it's going to struggle with, just because of the speed of the processors. Now, it is relatively straightforward to upgrade the processors on these machines. There are processors available from companies such as Sonnet, which would take it all the way up to a dual processor 1.8 GHz G4 if I so desired. But the problem with those sorts of upgrades is going to be the cost. For what you would spend on that sort of processor, you could get a more modern machine. So you're always going to have this trade-off between performance, processor speed and price. For me, the machine I've got does the job for the moment, and I would probably not want to actually upgrade the processor in it unless I could get a processor for it really, really cheaply. It's worth noting that these machines are absolutely super easy to work on. All you have to do is pull a catch on the side and the side drops open and everything inside the machine is there for you to be able to access. If you want to put extra drives in, no problem whatsoever. It's a simple screwdriver job to do that. Memory is the same thing. The slots are all there. The machine I've got has got 4 slots. Some of the later ones might only have 3. The memory they take is PC100 RAM, which I didn't find too hard to get hold of, to be honest. Though I had to do a little bit of digging around. You won't pay the absolute cheapest prices that you will pay with modern PC RAM, just because the chips aren't as available as they used to be. But you can get them, and you don't have to spend that much money. what's good about putting extra RAM in is once you've done it, then you've got the performance there. What I did is I put 1.5 gigabytes of RAM in mine, and that certainly made a difference to the performance of OS X. If you need to add USB 2 slots, it's a simple PCI card upgrade. Just get the right card that's native for OS X support and slot it right in and you're away. My machine already had such a card fitted when I bought it. If you want to add Wi-Fi, you can do that as well, again using an appropriate PCI card installation. You can get cards that are airport compatible, so basically, again, you don't need to add drivers, you just plug the card in, reboot the machine, and you'll find the airport support within OS X will take care of everything for you. The ease of upgrade of these machines, to me, makes them a real draw over something more modern like a Mac Mini, which, while it might be more powerful out of the box, is very limited for upgrades, particularly on RAM and hard drive space. Now, hard drives you can always remedy by plugging in an external drive, but RAM is really a problem on the Mac Mini. They only have 1 or 2 RAM slots, and actually getting into the machine is a bit of a bear. Basically, you have to pry the case apart with a putty knife. It's not something to be done for the faint of heart. The advantage of these PowerMac machines is, in fact, it's very, very easy to get inside them. The parts are available, they're relatively cheap, and, you know, if you have a problem with the machine after you've bought it, you've not invested a lot of money, so you don't have to worry too much about support. You can effectively treat the machine as somewhat disposable. If you find something breaks down, like a motherboard or a processor, and it can't be repaired cheaply, then fine, you just go to eBay and you try and get hold of another machine. Relatively straightforward to do. So, this is a call to arms for all Fenestration listeners. I encourage you to think about putting a Power Mac into your office space. Show those Windows users what they're really missing. The advantage of doing this, of course, is that OS X looks just as good on this sort of machine as it does on an Intel Mac Pro or a Mac Mini or a MacBook or any other of the current Intel machines. You really can't tell the difference. Of course, that will change at the end of this month when Leopard launches. A machine of this sort of vintage won't be able to run Leopard effectively. The ceiling for Leopard is an 800 MHz G4 processor, so if you have something slower than that, then Leopard's not going to be for you. But to be honest, if you're using it in an office environment and you're using the sort of software I'm talking about, Leopard support isn't really going to be something you'd want to see. Many of the features of Leopard are the sort of things that are actually going to slow these old machines down, rather than actually provide a benefit. Leopard really is something for the modern Macs. These older machines, well, they run Tiger just fine if you've upgraded them properly. That's going to do it for this session. As always, please send questions or comments to davidcohen@mymac.com. Until the next time.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.